This is Fred Allen, fellows. When the war first started, the Army rounded up a lot of old actors and said, "We want you hams to get some shows together. We're going to send you overseas to entertain the boys in service." Well, according to the good news we've been getting back home here recently, you fellas are going so fast, the actors can't possibly keep up with the troops. Now, you can't expect a lot of wind-broken old actors to keep up with you guys in jeeps. So I guess the only way I can overtake you boys is with a radio show. And that's what I have for you now. Our guest star is Orson Welles, who started out as a boy prodigy and lived up to it. We've got Benet Venuta, the famous Broadway singing star. We have Portland, the mighty Allen Art Players, and Al Goodman's orchestra. The program opens with Irving Berlin's hit song, "This is the Army, Mr. Jones."
In impartial test by Reader's Digest, ladies and gentlemen, one radio comedian was found to contain less corn than all other leading radio comedians combined. And here he is, Fred Allen.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Meatless Day start this week. I received my first invitation to a Meatless Day banquet today. The invitation says, "Come over next Tuesday. I have a bone to pick with you." VP.
Pardon me, Fred, please, pardon me.
Yes, Arthur?
I'm still worried about this announcing job. How am I doing?
Well, you're doing very well, Arthur. Why, you're booming those commercials out as though you were weaned on thunder, old boy. There's only one thing.
I have a shortcoming?
Well, there's one thing you don't seem to have grasped, Arthur. You know, on all of the comedy programs, the announcer is supposed to laugh at the comedian, you see. You haven't observed that,
I think. You mean I have to laugh at you?
Well, yes, all of the announcers have to laugh. Did you hear the Bob Hope show by any chance last Tuesday night? You didn't hear that gag where Hope and Betty Davis were talking about famous movie stars, and Bob said, "I'm a big name," and Betty said, "And I know what it is, but let's be friends." Well, you should have heard Hope's announcer, Wendell Niles, get hysterical at that show.
No kidding.
Did you hear Jack Benny's show tonight? What that underpaid Don Wilson had to laugh at tonight. And go to Arizona to do it yet. Why, that one gag, did you hear when Benny said he sat on a cactus out there around Phoenix? And not Phoenix, it's Benny. I mean, but he sat on a... Benny said he sat on a cactus, and Mary said he had to take his trousers off with tweezers later in the afternoon. Well, Don Wilson laughed at that, Arthur.
Oh, poor Don.
How are you? Say, tell me, how are you on laughing? That's all I wanted to know, Arthur. You just keep laughing, and I'll turn to the latest news of the week. The March of Trivia presents its weekly lowlight from the world of news. Washington, D.C. Newspaper's United Scrap Metal Committee starts a survey to determine which American city contributed the highest per capita quota to nationwide scrap drive. Five New York boroughs check on their salvage drives completed during the past week. A man who refuses to give his name from Queens reports...
The tavern where I hang out donated its brass rail for the metal drive.
The brass rail. Has the loss of the brass rail bothered you any?
After 20 years, I find that my right leg is 6 inches shorter than my left.
A lady from Brooklyn reports...
I put my husband out in front of the house. The metal drive took him away.
The metal drive took your husband?
Yeah, he had iron in his blood.
A gentleman from the Bowery says...
I give all the metal I had.
What business are you in, sir?
Well, lately I've been making a fair living hitting guys over the head with a piece of lead pipe.
And you,
I turned in me piece of lead pipe to the drive.
Good, and you're going straight now?
I ain't hitting guys with no metal no more.
Fine.
I'm using a rock.
Well, I'm sure you're leaving a good impression, and I think that cleans up. that cleans up the metal matters that we had in mind for this evening.
Would you think me rude if I intrude?
Not even if you had intruded sooner, I shouldn't have thought you would. Falstaff Openshaw.
The Tousle Tennyson at your service.
You and the muse have done it again, Falstaff.
Have you heard, said the mouse to the grouse, this is on the house?
No.
Believe me, buxom Julia, I wouldn't try to fool you.
No.
Put in your false teeth, mother, and leave me with a smile.
No. Tonight it may surprise you to learn that we have briefly discussed the scrap drive, ever so briefly.
Precisely why I am here. I have written a poem.
Well, what is your salvage monstrosity called?
We've got to show our mettle.
How does it go?
We've got to show our mettle if we want to down the axis. We've got to give our tin and brass as well as paying taxes. Our pots and pans make guns and tanks. Old skates and streetcar rails, basins, bed springs also help. And bumpers, junk and nails. Skid chains, bathtubs, kitchen sinks, kettles, tools, and bells. These and all your other scrap make bullets, bombs, and shells. Yes, we've got to show our mettle, so make sure your scrap is sped out. If you haven't turned your salvage in, brother, get that lead out.
Thank you. Our singing guest, the charming lady, one of the stars in the hit show by Jupiter, meet Miss Benet Venuta. Welcome to our little psychopathic circle, Benet. What are you going to sing for us tonight?
I'd like to do my favorite song from the show. Everything I've Got Belongs to You.
Mr. Goodman, if you will.
To give you dirty looks, I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with the knife I'm learning to do, and everything I've got belongs to you. I have a powerful anesthesia in my fist, and the perfect wrist to give your neck a twist. There are hammerlock holes I've mastered a few, and everything I've got belongs to you. Share for share, share alike. You get struck each time I strike. You for me, me for me. I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better, but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I have a terrible tongue, a temper for two, and everything I've got belongs to you. Don't stamp your foot at me, that's impolite. To stamp your foot at me is not quite right. All I discover is you're not so fine. I fear my lover is a swine. I have eyes for you to give you dirty looks. I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with a knife I'm learning to do, and everything I've got belongs to you. Share for share, share alike. You get struck each time I strike. You for me, me for me. I'll give you plenty of nothing. I'm not yours for better, but for worse. And I've learned to give the well-known witch's curse. I have a terrible tongue, a temper for two, and everything I've got belongs. Everything I've got belongs. Everything I've got belongs to you.
And now our guest tonight,
Mr. Allen.
Well, Cordwell.
Mr. Allen, which do you like, wogs, wags, or cogs?
Wogs, wags, or cogs for what?
Well, the Coast Guard is going to have a contest to find a name for its women's reserve.
Oh, well, how about a cross between co-ed and admiral? Co-ed, something like that. That'd be any good?
But I think Coastess would be better.
Coastess,
now, if you could help me.
Oh, no, look, I can't worry about the Coast Guard girls now, Portland. I have trouble enough around here.
Well, who is your guest?
That is my trouble. My guest is my trouble tonight. I have a telegram here from Orson Welles. He's coming here this evening.
Orson Welles?
Well, that's the way I feel about it, too. What he wants to see me about...
That's Orson Welles!
Wait, Portland. Control yourself, please. Come in. Yes?
Is this the microphone Mr. Welles is going to use?
Well, yes.
Step aside, buddy. 1, 2, 3, woof, woof. Hello, Max. 1, 2, 3, woof, woof. Hello, Max.
Just a minute. Just a minute, friend. What is this?
I'm Mr. Welles' personal chief technician.
Oh, you're here to check
right.
The...
This microphone may be all right for a schnook like you. It's got to be perfect. 1, 2, 3, woof, woof. Hello, Max. 1, 2, 3. Oh, it's okay.
Fine. Now, if you're...
Wait a minute. What's these scratches on the microphone?
Well, I tell you, our announcer, Arthur Godfrey, has buck teeth, and he...
Well, I hope Mr. Welles don't notice it.
Well, do you think I should spray the microphone with perfume?
Put heighten on, brother. And throw a little on yourself, too.
Orson Welles. Special technicians he has to have to go on the air. All the president needs is 2 logs and a Boy Scout.
Gee, I'm getting scared.
Well, why?
Well, maybe Mr. Welles is coming here to get even with you.
Even for what? I had nothing to do with Citizen Kane.
Orson Welles!
Portland, quiet, please. Come in.
Excuse me, I can't see a minute. Hello, out there. Hello, out there. Hello, out there.
Look,
quiet,
brother.
Please. Hello, out there.
What is this?
I am Mr. Welles' personal acoustical diagnostician.
Oh, I didn't...
I'm testing the acoustics.
Oh, you're testing the acoustics,
yes, in
here.
Yes, if Mr. Welles doesn't like the acoustics in here, you may have to tear down part of the studio.
Tear the whole...
Yes. Goodbye out there.
We should wreck the building for Mr. Welles, yes. Now, stop trembling, Portland.
I'm scared. Maybe Mr. Welles is going to beat you up for those jokes you told about him.
Beat who up? I have never seen a genius yet with muscles. Now... If Mr. Welles thinks that he's going to... Oh, now what?
Yes. Let me see.
Now, wait, just a please. What is with this sniffing, mister? Who are you?
I'm Mr. Welles' personal physician.
Yes.
But what...
I'm checking the air in here to see if it's fit for Mr. Welles to breathe.
Oh, yes.
Well, everybody else in here is breathing the air.
Mr. Welles is a great artist. He's a very sensitive man.
Oh, sensitive?
Yes.
Well, he was on Jack Benny's program last spring, wasn't he? And if he can stand that, he can stand anything.
Mr. Welles had a cold that night. Goodbye.
Mr. Welles sure doesn't take any chances, does he?
Boy, I wish I knew what he wanted to see me about. I'm getting nervous myself now, hanging around here, all these people. Hey, now, wait a minute, you fellas.
Mr. Welles is stepping out of his car.
Throw that red plush up to the microphone, boys.
Mr. Welles is entering the building.
Hit those spotlights, light that incense.
Mr. Welles is here.
The fanfare, Sam, presenting...
Well, good evening, Mr. Welles.
Excuse me. 1, 2, 3. Woof, woof. Hello, Max.
The microphone has been tested, Mr. Welles.
Good.
Hello out there. Hello out there.
The acoustics have been checked, Mr. Welles.
Good.
The air has been improved.
Very good. I'm a busy man.
Well, I know how.
I'm very happy to be here on the Philip Morris program this evening.
That was Friday night.
Oh, yes. What night is this?
Sunday.
Oh, yes.
This is the Texaco Star Theater. My name is Allen.
Fred Allen?
Yes.
How do you do, Mr. Allen?
Mr. Wells, I'm thrilled.
Naturally. I'll come to the point, Mr. Allen. Last year on your program, you said several derogatory things about me.
Oh, I say, you haven't met Portland yet, have you, Mr. Wells? She's dying to meet you. Portland?
Yes?
Portland, this is Orson Welles.
Hello, Portland. What's the matter with that child? Is that a shriek?
No, it wasn't a shriek. She has asthma. It's pitched a little high.
Well, let's get down to business, Mr. Allen, about those derogatory remarks.
Well, I don't...
Do you remember what you said about my home in Hollywood?
No, I don't recall.
Perhaps I can refresh your memory. You were talking about those trick doorbells they have out in Hollywood.
Oh, those fancy chimes effect.
Yes. You said when a person rang my doorbell, 16 peacocks flew out of the transom, 21 guns went off in a salute, and I came out of four doors simultaneously. And that time you were discussing Hollywood Victory Gardens. What was it you said?
Well, I just said that all you did was go out to your backyard, point to the ground and say, grow, and 14 acres of corn sprang up. I'm sorry.
Well, that was last year. I'm here to speak to you about this year.
Mr. Wells, believe me, I haven't made a single crack about you this year.
What's the matter, Fred? Don't you like me anymore?
You're not mad, Orson?
Not at all, Fred. I enjoy a good laugh. As well as anybody.
Well, Orson...
We're all alone.
This is a great surprise to me.
Why, Fred?
Well, I always pictured you as a man from another planet. A genius, a legend in the making. And here you are, joking and laughing with little old egg-laying me.
Fred, I wish somebody would do something about this Superman myth the public has swallowed about me. It's embarrassing. After all, I'm just an ordinary guy. I'm paid
well,
to...
Well, I know. You're paid to say that. Oh, thank you. I know, Orson, but your early life has been shrouded in mystery. Now, if people were only told something about your childhood...
Well, what's there to tell, Fred? I was born in Chicago. Like any other kid, I went through grammar school. Age of five, I entered Northwestern University.
At five, you entered college?
As a sophomore, I skipped the freshman year. My college days were uneventful. I majored in Esperanto. I belonged to the glee club, and at fight nights, I used to sing duets with myself.
You sang duets all alone?
Yes. I forgot to mention it. Until I was 12, I had two heads.
Two heads?
I was like thousands of other kiddies running around Chicago in those days. Well, I got out of college at seven. Magna cum laude. I hung around Einstein a while, and we tipped one day over a bit of calculus, and I rejected Einstein's theory and went into the theater.
And the rest, of course, is history.
Oh, it's been nothing, Fred. I've had a little success with theater, radio, and pictures. Does that mean I'm a genius? I wear the same clothes as other men. I eat the same food. Like any ordinary guy who works hard, my feet hurt at the end of the day.
Well, no wonder. Trying to squeeze 14 toes in an ordinary pair of shoes. But tell me, Orson, are you back from Hollywood to do a play?
No, Fred, I'm going back into radio for the Lockheed Company. That's really why I wanted to talk to you tonight.
Oh, about your new program?
Yes, I want you to appear with me in my first play.
Me? Orson, gad, this is an honor, man. What is your... What is your first play?
We'll do Victor Hugo's great story, Les Miserables. You will co-star with me.
Just you and I do the entire play?
Yes, it will be 50-50. I'll play Jean Valjean.
And I?
You will play the French detective Javert.
Javert, hey? Je suis Zillor.
You speak French, Fred?
Just enough to get out of Rumpelmayer's, Orson. Just enough to get out.
Well, that'll help a lot. Now, if we can rehearse a minute, we'll run over the play here before I go.
All right. We'll present our co-starring epic, Les Miserables, immediately following a short selection by Mr. Goodman. Allen and Wells. Gosh.
Or Wells and Allen.
Thank you.
now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Wells and I present our dramatic highlight of the evening. Are you ready, Orson?
Yes, Fred, you have your part.
Yes, I must confess I'm a little nervous.
You'll be all right, Fred. You're with me in every scene.
We're co-stars.
Oh, yes, everything's 50-50.
Well, how does the play start?
I do the narration,
Oh,
Fred.
I see.
Les Miserables. Victor Hugo's immortal story of a soul transfigured and redeemed through suffering. This is an Orson Welles production.
Radio version of Les Miserables prepared by...
Orson Welles.
Directed by...
Orson Welles.
Starring...
Orson Welles. During Orson Welles' presentation of Les Miserables, Mr. Welles will be assisted by that sterling dramatic actor of stage, screen, and radio.
Now, wait a minute.
Something wrong, Fred?
Well, all I've heard so far is Orson Welles. Now, after all, if I am co-starring with you, at least my name should be mentioned here.
Well, I announced you, Fred. The music cut in too quickly.
Well, now watch that, Mr. Goodman. You're over-anxious tonight. I'm in this play, too, don't forget. I happen to be the co-star tonight.
I wish you wouldn't be so impulsive, Fred. Les Miserables is the story of two men. Jean Valjean, the hunted convict, and Javert, the merciless detective.
I'm Javert, and you are Jean Valjean.
That's right. Each character is equally important to the story. It's 50-50.
50-50. All right, let's go.
Now, the first scene is a dingy garret in the slums of Paris. As the story opens, I am hiding out. I think I've escaped you. As we first see Jean Valjean, he is soliloquizing. At last, Jean Valjean, you are safe. There is no cause to fear. The Javert who has hounded you so long... Javert, your nemesis, that merciless bloodhound, always in pursuit of you, is finally thrown off the track, completely baffled. Oh, hark. The sound upon the stairs. Footsteps. Those same plodding footsteps. Javert. What is to be done? Ha! This window. Jean Valjean will never be taken. Goodbye, Javert!
Wait a minute.
Oh, listen, after all.
Wait a minute now.
Later, Fred, later. We start the second scene now.
We? Never mind the second scene. What about that first scene?
It was 50-50.
But you took both 50s in the...
That's ridiculous, Fred. What stole the entire scene?
Well, what?
Well, it was that knock on the door. And who knocked on that door? Javert.
Javert. I play Javert.
You motivate the entire story.
Well, I just...
If you hadn't knocked at the door, I'd still be in that garret. We'd have no play.
Oh, I didn't realize.
Yes, in the second scene, you dominate the whole thing. I'm just a foil.
Oh, a foil. Well, that sounds good. What is the second scene?
It's years later. Uh-huh. This time, you, Javert, have me trapped. Cosette Fauventou, a demi-monde, is concealing me in the back room of a bistro. I, Jean Valjean, am pacing up and down.
Jean, will you stop pacing? Toujours up and down.
This is the end, Cosette. Me farewell to freedom. Instead of liberty waits the galley crew, the iron collar, the chain at his feet, fatigue, the dungeon, the plank beds, all the horrors I know so well. To submit morning and evening to the hammer of the roundsman who tests the fetters. Time is short. The net is tightening. Javert!
Quick, Jean Valjean! Through this trap door!
Merci, Cosette! Jean Valjean will never be taken again! Au revoir, Javert!
Oh, now, wait. Look, oh! Oh, you're over. Hold it now. You're overdoing it.
Fred!
Fred!
You were magnificent! You stole that scene right from out from under my nose!
I stole the scene again.
That's suspense, man.
What suspense? All I
I've seen Javert played 100 times. The Theater Guild, the Grand Guignol. Eddie Dowling has played Javert. But I've never heard of Javert get the tone out of that police whistle that you got tonight.
Now, look, Austin, I don't want to hog the whole thing. But in two acts, all I've done so far is knock on a door and blow a whistle. Now, after all, I'm an actor. I'm not a sound man. When do I get to read some lines?
The next scene is all yours, Fred.
Oh, good.
Your speech is the climax of the entire play.
Well, now we're getting someplace. What's next?
On this final scene, you trail me through the sewers of Paris.
Oh, the sewers.
You finally corner me single-handed, and now we stand face to face. I have just a few words, and then you speak.
I speak. Well, that sounds good. Let's go.
Mandu, alone in the sewer. Wrapped like a rat, who nightly crawls through this hideous muck of the city. The gloomy darkness, this narrow archway above my head, these two slimy corridor walls. But hark, that sloshing through the muck, Javert. At last you cornered me, Javert. Don't talk, Javert. Before you seal my doom, I would speak for the last time. You will never take Charvel's jaw alive, Javert. The water in the sewer is rising, Javert. I am 6'9". You, Javert, are 5'2". The water rises, Javert. There is no turning back. The water, higher, higher. Now, Javert, you have Charvel's jaw at your mercy. Pronounce my doom. Speak, Javert. Speak.
Well, I guess that concludes our meeting for this time, boys. I hope you liked the program, and I hope you'll be hearing from me again real soon. This is Fred Allen saying goodbye and good luck.
This program was produced by the Special Service Division of the War Department of the United States of America.